To hang out if you want. Just waiting for some folks to trickle in for a minute. I was going to cover how to inexpensively cloud mine Zeph if you don't want a computer and stuff and just want to like mine it via basically cloud services on Akash. Hey Slinks, can you hop up? Are you busy? I said you busy right now or no?
I just woke up. I need to go to the store to get some milk and then I can fully have your attention.
Okay, cool. And I was just checking to see, like, have you done any cloud mining yet of Zeph?
Not a nerd like that, but I want to learn.
It's pretty easy. I was going to talk a little bit about it, but like, I think like I've been holding Akash tokens from like the last, I don't know, a couple of years. I kind of like picked it up. I think it's like $1.70 now or something. I think I got it like on average about $2. So I've kind of been a bag holder in the thing. Like what you can do with it is you can basically like, you know, it's decentralized cloud application. So on Akash, you can deploy like a website, you can deploy a database, you can deploy, now they have GPU on there. So you can like GPU mine certain things, although there's not too many things you can GPU mine lately. You can just pretty much anything you do on a cloud instance on Amazon, AWS, or like Microsoft Azure or something like that, you can use it to deploy a decentralized application. So it's like a good place for like, say, for example, Zephyr Protocol's website to move to Akash because then it can't be shut down so easily. So that's kind of one of the benefits of it. Or at least have a copy of all of Zephyr's shit on Akash, which is pretty cheap. And that way, like, you know, sometimes how their wallet website might be down or whatever because there's too much traffic, you won't have that problem because people have a second place to grab their, information or whatever they need. So Akash is pretty cool. Hey, Robo, what you doing? Robo, are you there? I don't know if you can hear me or not.
Yes, bro. I'm only here because Slinks DM'd me and said, Uncle Seffy is sending your fucking Zeph bags like fucking 10x. I mean, what's happening, bro? We're up like 30% on the daily, are we? What's happening?
You did pick up some on the dip, yes?
Bro, fucking Zeph, like literally, it's like the worst kept secret in crypto, isn't it? It's like literally the worst kept secret. It's like quite hilarious, actually, how it's panning out.
It's really cool that the market cap is still very small, so it's like definitely not too late. Like there's no question that if I had discovered it today, I'd get some. So I don't like have any qualms about like shilling it to you at this price for sure. But it's I picked it up again at like 27 because I got in first at six-ish or something like that. And even then I was late because Up told me about it when it was like 3. And I was just like fucking around and didn't like pay attention to him for a little bit. Like he almost never should fade Up. He knows what he's doing. Anyway, so I picked it up and then I doubled the amount of cash I put into it at about $27. So even though like I bought some at 6, I actually got more, a lot more at 27. So I'm kind of comfortable now with the position, I think. Obviously, these things are stupid in that like when they go up, you wish you got more. That's always how it is. Like, it's just always like that.
I think if you look, Seffy, I think if you look at a lot of the like the 2020 DeFi coins, obviously like a number of them took a hit with the election in the November. But if you look at like what like RV, Comp, Maker, what these coins did, like seriously, there's no reason on earth why Zeph can't reach $1,000.
Thousands is the obvious target for a proof of work. I think like my target is more like 3,000, approximately there. which makes sense for like somewhere between like a 5 to 10 billion market cap top. I think it's very, very feasible. If you look back at Monero, you look back at look what Casp is doing right now. It's like close to 3 billion. So it's just simply a matter of just getting the buzz going. That's about it. But it's got a long way to go. Like, because the hash rate's really good. The hash rate is currently like very similar to what Monero is, which as the difficulty is going up for mining, like I can tell because my difficulty on my rig is like spiking to like 2000K or something like that, which is like the highest it's been in a while. So it's going to get harder to mine it, which means like emissions are essentially hard capped to some extent because like the more miners that come in, it's harder and harder to get more coins out of it. So it's like a $300,000 a day worth of sell pressure, but it's got like $3 million a day worth of volume, up to like 5 million a day, depending on the day. So there's like no question there's more buyers than inflation. And then the total count of the coins is only like 2.5 mil, right? So you've got like 2.5 million coins, and then you've got maybe like 500,000 of them are pre-mines. The team owns those, and they're going to be using those to probably deploy on exchanges and shit like that. They usually lend to exchanges, how that works. And then you've got like whichever miners that have mined so far. So if, 500,000 are locked, 700,000 are locked as ZSD at this point, then like the free floating supply is mainly only like, something south of 1 million coins, if not less. So it's the thing's going to moon. Like there's almost no question about it. It's like basically Caspa or whatever, except with like, the stablecoin flywheel that locks up more of it in ZSD. So it has a little bit of that Luna UST flywheel, but without the death spiral problem. And I think it's going to go super, like, just parabolic, like crazy.
When Binance, pretend I'm a Jeet. When Binance, bro. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah, right. Well, I think this would be more likely to show up probably on something like KuCoin first. It could make it to Binance quickly. And I was just checking to see if like what privacy coins are on Coinbase and on.
They have a history, you know. Well, I was going to say it. That's interesting. You mentioned Coinbase. So Binance have actually got a history of supporting privacy coins, right? Or privacy coins.
Yeah. They always have. Well, Binance supports almost everything. So it's really not saying much there. Like they put almost everything goes to Binance eventually.
Dude, but, they had the earliest like secret pair, so you could only trade secret that. On a centralized exchange for BTC. Yeah, back in like 2020, like secret BTC was the only pair on a SEX at that time, right? Everything else had to be done through like Siena or whatever that shit exchange was, Siena.ai or whatever. Fuck, that was bullshit, wasn't it? Secret back in the day was absolute dog shit.
Yeah, so they're also bringing. So I was looking at Kraken and Coinbase, which are some of the bigger U.S. exchanges, and Kraken has Monero, and Coinbase has Zcash. So both of them do have some privacy coins, so I think it's quite feasible that eventually you can get to the U.S. ones. But the other thing is, because it's anonymous and it's proof of work, like the odds that it's going to be deemed some kind of like, security or whatever is a little bit less, although the pre-mine that the team has does make it sort of like into a security of a type. So I'm not too worried about it showing up on US exchanges, basically. I think as long as it like shows up everywhere else, it's fine. People so sort of make their right.
Can I ask you a question? I mean, I don't want to pivot. Mm-hmm. Obviously, keep on the topic, but a lot of American friends I've heard from recently have been kicking off about the airdrop situation. Obviously, the Celestia one was a very sore point, Neutron amongst others. I mean, I know you might not be able to speak about stuff, it's up to you, but have you been able to claim your airdrop sync with a VPN or DVPN or what?
Well, it would have been fine if, like, Celestia would have just been like, okay, just, yeah, you can get it if you use a VPN, whatever, but we don't sanction anyone from America getting it. But instead, what Celestia did was they used some system where they blocked tons and tons of different VPNs and their, like the VPN servers. So they actually went out of their way, which pissed me off about Celestia. So I'm like, fuck that. Like, I bought their coin, let it double, and then I dumped it. And I'm like, fuck you. Like, I'm not going to support them.
Yeah, the geo blocked every fucking North American VPN.
I could have gone out of my way and, found some little bitty VPN or created my own or some shit and then eventually got it. But I don't have time for that shit. Like, I can just 10X my shit somewhere else. Like, what do I need to mess with their noise? So I was like, screw it. I just ignored it. Like, whatever. So that, yeah, I kind of got, I got bored of looking for a way to do it, and I just like, I didn't have the time, couldn't be bothered. I'd rather just sit around chit chatting on Twitter and bullshitting than like finding some ridiculous airdrop somewhere. Something like
I was about to say, dude, it's been a real like thing like lately with the community, like with like the Pith one, Neutron, because some of them have been worth like decent money. There's really been a fucking uproar. I'll shut my mouth because you've got new speakers, but yeah, there's a lot of people like, we never used to be seeing this like back in the day, like when Osmosis airdrop, when Juno airdrop, there wasn't this convo. It's so fucking prevalent now because after what we've seen, everybody is terrified stateside, aren't they?
I guess like they just want to be like seen as like peddling to securities and whatever. But the thing is, even though technically speaking, Celestia is a security, it was still listed on Coinbase. So like in other words, don't let users get the airdrop for free, but they can buy it. Like it's like, it doesn't even make any sense. The Celestia people really pissed me off on that one. I'm like, fuck that. Like they would have gotten a lot of tweets out of me because I think the project is interesting, but like you fuck me over, you're going to reap the whirlwind on that one. That's just how it goes, but whatever. Right. Like, so anyway, I was going to mention like, so for people that are not aware, if you want to try to mine Zeph and you want to attempt to do it with just a cloud service, which means like, you know, maybe none of you have done this before, like use Amazon Web Services or like Azure Cloud, but you can basically run a little, like you can run a container, which basically contains any application in a set of CPUs that are on the cloud. So if you go to Cloudmos, that's Cloudmos, you can actually log into that with a Kepler wallet. If you have Akash tokens, which is AKT, you can basically pay for cloud services on there. And what you can do is if you go to a section on there called, that's like a subsection about GPUs and CPUs, you can go to the CPU section. And in there, there's already a pre-made thing to do like Monero cloud mining. And what you do is you hit the deploy button. It'll pop up a box that shows you a bunch of text. And you might be like, I'm not a programmer. I don't know what this is. But there's only two blanks in there that you have to change. And one is the server for your that you're going to use to farm, like the pool server for the Zephyr farm. And you can get a pool server address by just simply going to the Zephyr protocol website, and there's a bunch of servers there. You copy their URL, which is like their website, colon, and it'll have like four digits next to it, like 5331 or whatever. And you can copy that, paste it in, and that would give you that piece. And then the other piece you have to paste in is your wallet. So if you have a Zephyr wallet, you can paste that. And then you just pay with Akash tokens, you know, however much you want. And you can get like, you know, 12 CPUs, 30 CPUs, you can get like a certain number of amount of RAM and stuff. So you can kind of play around with it and see and like experiment with it. You know, you can start as many instances as you want and you can pay essentially by the month. And that's an option if you want to play around instead of like running a whole mining rig yourself. The other way you can mine Zephyr is, so anyway, just to get back to that, it's Cloudmos, Cloudmos. And Tank did a video on it, which is pretty good. If you type in like on YouTube Tank and you type in let's see, Akash, AKASH, and you type in Zeph, you'll find the link to his video. He does a pretty good job just running through the basics of it. It's pretty simple. Anyway, so that's one way to mine it. The other way is like to get a PC like I did and just start, you know, make one, and AMD is a good chip for it. Pretty cool, efficient, and I'm getting good hash rate at like, since yesterday I've been getting like 15,500 hash after a little bit of setup in the BIOS, and that didn't take long once I figured out what I was doing, and that's a pretty good hash rate. It prints about, I think it's going to make me like around 1.5 Zephyr per month, maybe. I'm expecting difficulty to go up, and that might go down to one Zephyr a month. That might not seem like a lot when Zephyr's like $35 or whatever, but when the price of the coin goes up, I think Zephyr can readily hit like 1,000. So I'm kind of just collecting the coins thinking like, well, you know, if I mine like 10 coins over a year, makes about, you know, in the green, about $10,000. The cost of the PC or whatever is like 700. I'm like, whatever. This is a good time to mine. as far as like return on investment. If you wait much later, the return on investment's not going to be as high. It'll be like mining Monero today, which is fairly highly difficult, and it's hard to be profitable on mining. So late stage miners usually mine in order to get like coins that have never touched an exchange, and so they have like their money in their pocket that nobody knows about. But early stage miners, you can really make a buck off of it. So I just kind of hooked up a Zeph wallet to the miner, and you know, put in a mining pool. I was recommended miningocean.org, which is one of the pools that Up mentioned. Hooked it all up. It's running, doing great. And the power consumption on this PC is basically nothing. So I was thinking of maybe buying like, I don't know, 10 more of these things and just kind of like going crazy because I've got plenty of space. If you do a lot of them, you have to be careful because they're noisy. So you have to be careful like that you have a spot to do this, like maybe in the garage or something where you can heat up the garage with the miners in the winter or whatever. Anyway, so there's some different options there. And then you could also, if you have existing computers, people have been playing with those and asking questions about that. Like, what about my Mac? What about just my regular PC or my laptop? If you use laptops and stuff, I would probably put a limit. There's a way to limit the, there's a little command line you type in there, and you want to limit the max hash rate so you don't like overheat the thing. Or like go into the BIOS of your laptop and make sure that it throttles based on temperature so it doesn't damage the laptop. If you're on a Mac M1 or M2, there is XMRig that you can use for the Mac. But like even with an M2, I think the hash rate's only like 5K or something. It's not very good. So that's kind of an expensive computer to be trying to do this on. So if you already own a computer and you just want to like run it because you got it, well, fine, do it. But it's not a very high throughput, like high yield. Like imagine like a Mac M2 is a pretty expensive computer. It only gets you like 5,000 hash, whereas this $750 little joke of a thing with AMD like gets you like 15,000 hash. And I paid about like 750 for this particular rig, 750 USD, something like that. And it works out pretty well. Otherwise, yeah, like it took a little bit of time to just sort of sort out what I'm doing with the thing. But once it's all good and running, like the skill set's good because you can mine anything afterwards. Because once you've done it once, you'll sort it out and get experience with it. So those are some different options for mining Zeph if you want to try to do that. I figured this is just a fun little thing instead of just like watching, you know, price go up or, you know, whatever. And I think it will be profitable, especially with this grade of processor. And what I've been told by Up is that like these AMD processors are very efficient and they're very hard to break in the sense that like, so long as you like, if you mine for 2 years, you're like, I just want to play video games on this thing afterwards, or I want to use it, or I just want to sell it. It's pretty easy to sell these things, you know, on the open market. So like you could probably get about the typical eBay price of these things. You could probably get like 50% of your money back on the mining rig. So the cost of the rig is not, you know, the entire price of the thing. It's how much, you know, you're probably blowing like 50% of the cost of the thing to mine, if I had to guess. You know, unless you want the computer for long term, which I do. So I just got a little bit of an upgraded one, a little bit higher RAM, a little bit higher chip and higher motherboard and stuff. So that's pretty cool. But I think you will be able to pay it off. I think it's very reasonable that within a year you would have definitely enough price action to pay off the rig if you want to. So that's an idea. Anyway, let's see. But so one of the things to sort of note is that AKT is another coin that I've had for a few years. And I kind of like the thing, I bought it for like a $2, maybe that, you know, 180, something like that's my average. The thing pumped to like maybe $8 during the bull market. And I had the coin staked this last bull market, and the thing dumped all the way back down to like, I don't know, 40 cents or some shit. So it's kind of like one of those extreme pump and dump type situations. But this time around, the like prices bottomed out. It sort of started picking up again. It is now at like around $1.60. I think it's still fairly priced. I would say that, of course, because that's crossed in my bag. But it has kind of stabilized and kind of start trickling upwards. I think it's ready for a breakout again. I think it could probably challenge its previous high. Why do I think that? Because unlike a lot of other bullshit tokens in crypto, Akash actually does something and pay for cloud services with the token. And the token holders get some of the revenue of the cloud services that are happening. So it's like a legit coin. It's a legit system. It's a guy by the name of Greg Osuri. He's a developer within the Cosmos ecosystem. And AKT is available kind of everywhere now, I think. It's like a market cap of like maybe, what is it, 120 or something like that. Yeah, Mayor's in the audience there. He knows what I'm talking about. Let me look real quick and give you the metrics a little bit as far as market cap and stuff. This thing is $1.65 right now, market cap 137. I'm sorry, market cap rank is 137. Market cap itself is 366 million. It is a stakeable coin. I don't remember what the staking rate is right now. It's down about 80% from its all-time high, which was $8. And so it's got plenty of sort of upside left for a bull market time. And it actually does stuff and it actually has utility. So I think there's the legit people will constantly be talking about this at one level or the other because it has legitimate use. It's not one, it's not a scam or anything. And it's been out for quite some time now. Anyway, but yeah, it's a thought.
Steffi, are the unlocks finished? I think Akash, I'm pretty sure now, are the unlocks are over and done with, aren't they?
I mean, like, yeah, me and like March. Yeah, in like March, most of the unlocks happened for Akash.
March, okay.
That's when I started buying around then.
So, that's a good, that was a smart play. I probably should have bought some more as well. I just wasn't paying attention. I had my bag, it was sitting there. I didn't really care. I was earning yield or whatever.
Typically, Steffi, it's been like, say, like DYDX, where every time there's been an unlock, same like coins like YGG and that I've been like following and tracking. Every time there's these unlocks, there's these gigantic fucking dumps, you know, one way or another. Yep.
Did you see it also used to have crazy high inflation. Remember, it was like 45%. So I made a lot of coins on the inflation. So, and then they dropped the inflation rate also. So the inflation rate dropped and the dumping period is over. So I think it's a little bit more like stabilized now as far as like a newcomer wanting to look into it. But it's a cool project. I mean, like it used to suck because before, like, they didn't have any good way to deploy shit on Akash. So if you wanted to put your website on there or whatever, the interface sucked. Now with Cloudmos, which is that video I told you guys about, like you can just hop onto Cloudmos and like, I mean, hell, you can run a Zeph miner on there pretty easily. That's a CryptoTanks video on YouTube. You can watch that to learn how he did it. But like, the point is like, if you want to create a cloud instance, a cloud website in a decentralized manner where no one knows like, you know, where your website is or whatever, and you can't be shut down on Akash, then that's where you'd want to put your website. So like that's where Zephyr Protocol's website should be ideally, where it can't be shut down. It's not unreasonable to put it both on Akash network and Flux network. So you have multiple front ends running. It's pretty, and it's quite inexpensive to run a site on there. You only need like, you know, limited CPU processing power. So it'll be very, very cheap. So like, you know, in the order of like dollars a month or whatever, you're going to be able to run a website. You know, the beauty of that is it can't be shut down because, you know, Zephyr is one of those things that could become like, you know, Target or something at some point in the future. So you want to have like multiple URLs, multiple backups essentially. But anyway, yeah, pretty cool stuff. But anyway, AKT, I think, like has good potential upside and it's sort of like made a little local peak of about $1.80 something and now it's $1.65. And I think it's very likely to, you know, keep catching bids, especially if we continue to have a bull market. Because BTC, remember, I've said this a million times, like its Fib resistance is like at 37 something, and now it's at 38 something. So it's kind of breaking out. And usually a breakout of Fib resistance for BTC means it's going to be headed to next would be the prior high would be likely. And if it hits prior high and goes beyond, of course, the altcoin space is going to explode. And everything, you know, everything you possibly imagine, you just throw a dart at it, it's going to go up, right? So like, so I think this is the time that hopefully everything starts to moon. That would be ideal. So we'll see how that goes.
Hey, Steffi, real quick, while you're talking about Akash, the one thing I like about it is Greg has been around for a long time in tech in general. I think he was with a big tech company before he got into crypto. He's one of the better, smarter founders.
This is a serious project. This is not like one of these like, well, let's make a chain and hope people play on Dapp.
He understands revenue. No. He understands he needs to have revenue if he's going to run a sustainable business. And I think they were able to pivot just when they realized that CPU demand was going to be so high. I think they did a little bit of a pivot to where they...
You mean for GPUs?
Yes, correct.
Yep, they added GPUs, yep.
We should get him on. I would love to hear you and him talk for like an hour. I think it would be, yeah.
I talked with him a long time ago. We should do another thing though, for sure. But for now, just for people to play, like definitely check out Tank's YouTube video about this. It's definitely worth the watch. And you might be interested in, like, it's very, very cheap to like run a cloud instance, like nothing compared to like, you know, running a whole computer and stuff. But if you want to practice Zeph mining, you could do it on any computer really that you have at home, or you could do it on an actual rig that you make separately, or you could do it on this cloud thing fairly easily. There's really only two or three lines you got to copy and paste. The thing that might, you know, trip you up is when you have to have like a Kepler wallet so you can buy some Akash and put it on there. And then you need to have a Zephyr wallet, obviously, so you can deposit your winnings from the mining, and then you pay with the Akash token on the cloud services. It's pretty straightforward. The biggest thing for crypto is like, it's very easy to get lazy and not just like, instead of just learning something new, it's like, oh, let me just sit around and do nothing. And that's what people do. And then, but I think if you're going to bother mining some Zephyr, I think in the next 6 months to a year is going to be your like best opportunity. It's like, and you also benefit the network because you wind up decentralizing the network more. You take more of the network share out of like various centralized entities like mining farms and shit, and then you help decentralize things, and you also end up taking some of the coins off the market, because the more the difficulty rises for mining, the harder it is for other people who are going to sell the token, unlike yourselves who might want to own it, you're just going to reduce the sell pressure by mining it. So it's like, you know how Satoshi never sold his coins? It'd be the same kind of situation, like where Vitalik Buterin would like diamond hand his Ethereum or whatever from mining it. So, but I think that's a way to contribute. The other thing to do also is like, if you own Zephyr on the exchanges, obviously most of you aren't leaving tokens on fucking TradeOgre or some bullshit. But if you get any tokens on any of these exchanges, be sure to move them out to either the web wallet or to, the desktop wallet, whichever one you choose. But like, it's not a good idea to leave these on the exchanges for two reasons. One is if something happens to an exchange, like a Mt. Gox type situation, and you know someone gets hacked, you could lose funds, and that's been known to happen. I don't know how secure like all these exchanges are. The other reason why you should take your coins off the exchange is because, remember, like as far as the exchange is concerned, like your wallet address is simply like a bookmark to them. That money may or may not be there, and they, who knows what they're going to do with it. Like if you look what FTX did with people's money. In your wallet, it looks like there's money there, but in the real life, that in the background, there is no money there, and they might be rehypothecating it or lending it out, and they'll lend it out to people who can then short the token. So, like, basically, the very best thing you can do is to create a supply shock as quickly as possible, and you want to move all your Zephyr off of into your wallets.
There was 87 million in paper Bitcoin on FTX. So that's what you're talking about, paper Bitcoin,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's kind of like paper.
87 million.
Yeah, because they'll say you own it, but what it is, it's just a bookmark of you owning it. It's like a database.
It's
entry.
A receipt.
It's not the real.
A receipt, right?
It's a receipt. It's not a real thing. Yeah, the exchange. When you give it to an exchange and they have a lending borrowing platform, you may have your Bitcoin lent out. Same thing with Zephyr or whatever. So what will happen is like, so exchanges want to make money. They want to make money on like, perpetuals, they want to do it on futures, they want to do it on short and long positions or whatever. They want to make money. So what they do is they put all these things on, they do it after the popularity of the coin goes up so that like, they don't want like a lot of shorting pressure initially. So they won't do it initially, but as time goes on, they'll tend to take these coins and then offer them out to borrow and lend. And the more coins that they have available to them, the more shenanigans they're likely to do. So you would rather the exchange have to buy more coins, from the open market in order to, or mine it themselves in order to do this. You don't want them to.
You don't want to just leave that equity just sitting around on their exchange.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You don't want to give them the equity to make money off of it. All they'll do is make your coin price go down, which is stupid.
Real quick, Sefi, I just wanted to throw in there. I listened to a space with Carter from Shade, and they were talking about stable coins. And I really hadn't thought about it that much, and just until recently. I think Rama brought up a tweet about how, you know, USDC, everyone's embracing it with open arms, you know, until, you know, they have, you know, 90% control of the Cosmos stable coins. And then, you know, if they want to shut down your DeFi experience, they possibly could. And I looked up the legal docs on USDC, and they absolutely can blacklist certain accounts. And
bro, you know, wait a minute. Sorry, Nia. Sorry, you know, USDC, mm-hmm. you know, USDC, you know, the blacklisted all of the Tornado cash wallets, right?
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah. Straight away. Yeah. And so I guess, Seppi, like, I think you've homed in on this little gem, you know, because.
Yeah. I think this is more than just a gem. I think it's like absolutely magnificent. Yeah. It's going to absolutely fucking move.
The way it's designed.
Like, I have conviction like you have. I haven't seen in a long time. Like, I usually love it when I like fall in love with something. And this is one of those things.
Yeah.
I think it's going to absolutely fucking go sure. nuts. Assuming that sure. the team is legit.
Wait a minute, yeah. Right, let's say you've put five figures in. Let's say you're five figures deep. You might be even more, but let's say you're five figures deep, right? So what's the odd? Like, what's the R to R for you? What's the risk to fucking reward ratio, like,
well,
in your mind?
Well, first of all, if there's any of the developers in the room, I'm going to ask you to, like, don't fumble the ball. Don't fuck up security. Don't de-anonymize yourselves. Like, you know, take care of the project and don't fuck it up. So the risk reward would be, like, if the team fucks something up as far as, like, the stablecoin system, the Oracle system, or like they, you know, rug pull their team funds or some bullshit, then you know the risk would be like go to zero type of thing. If they can stay anonymous, they can kind of like move in the shadows, not create any like drama in the background, and like, you know, simply have zero FUD going on, like I think the thing can moon, and it's very much worth it to the development team to make sure this is successful, because it, like,
yeah,
it's an obvious win for everybody
if they, you know, can, I mean, reinforce their position. But here's another thing, just to jump off.
Oh, so just, well, to answer that question, so number one, the risk is the risk on the bottom end would be zero, and well, not exactly zero, because, you know, it's basically a Monero coin, so it won't be zero, but like, you know, something close to it if the price tanks for some reason, right? But the upside, on the other hand, I think is like, I think you could hit like 3 to 10 billion market cap levels. Like Monero plus the stablecoin piece adds to the extra like flywheel effect and holding pressure. So if Monero is 3 billion, this can definitely make it to 10. I think it's highly probable. Yeah.
Where's the market cap right now?
It's like 100 million or something.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Here's another.
So yeah, you're talking
also
about a long way.
Mia, one second. It's fundamental. Mechanism is over collateralization. Basically, it's not no algo. It's not no USD. It's not no algo.
I would say the more fundamental mechanism is that the core token is proof of work, which Do Kwon didn't achieve because he had a proof of stake system, and Luna's, like, you know, 50% of the Luna was printed out of thin air that TFL held, if you guys recalled. The tokenomics of this is dramatically better just from the outset. And simultaneously, so this can function without the stablecoin at all. Like, this could function as just a simple Monero. So if you just look at it from just the perspective that it's like a slightly better Monero system, then you could command probably a billion market cap just on that alone. You add the stablecoin part, the stablecoin piece is like, I would say, like, yeah, it's over collateralized. It's a DJED based system. It's been secure in previous protocols that have used it. And the over collateralization basically is what's called capital efficient. Inefficient. It keeps very much of the stable from actually being created, which in this instance is good for us, because that means whenever we want to convert from ZEF to a stablecoin, we can do so on a whim, because our over-collateralization is like 3,000% or whatever, right? So like, when you have crazy over-collateralization, it's way more convenient to use for you and me. Like, maybe the devs intended like the collateralization ratio sit between 4 to 800%, which is where the target like sort of amount is. But so long as ZEF just keeps skyrocketing, then, like, you know, there's plenty of room for the stablecoin part of it to be minted and grow without any particular consequence at all. And I think so long as it's hyper collateralized, what will happen is people will trust that there's a place to exchange their, you know, that the thing is properly backed, and therefore arbitragers are going to keep the peg of a dollar on the exchanges.
Do you know what could be the best thing ever to happen to this, right? Would be for Sideshift to implement it and use as pairs to use like the stable as like the main pairs on their exchange. Like if Sideshift like implemented this, they would
So remember, this is like a UTXO style system, and you in order to, and it has like ring signatures for privacy. It's not that easy to create like a DEX with it. You can, but it's a bit of work. And I think, you know, coupled with some previous Monero DEXs, I think there's a Monero Bitcoin DEX. It would be really, really good if they added ZSD to that particular DEX. That way you could move from BTC. So this that way, like if you had BTC in your wallet and you wanted to buy privacy coins, you can get it on a DEX, hopefully, don't have to go to a centralized exchange in the future. I think that like building all that is highly likely to happen if this takes off. That's why it's really, really critical for us to hit like maybe like 1 billion plus market cap. And then you have the world's attention, right? Because your market cap's high enough that everyone's like, ooh, the liquidity's coming here. We want to build more shit for this, right? Because like to some degree, there's a, you know, build it, they will come type of philosophy. But on the flip side, it's like wherever the liquidity goes, that's where the builders want to build. So, you know, and not only that, but like it takes a number of years specifically for like the stability of the system to be established and to be certain that there's not some kind of rug pulls or problems with it. So, you know, I think more development will happen over a 3-year time frame as opposed to immediately. I could be wrong. I mean, maybe they have a bunch of shit in the works. These are not like lazy devs or whatever. It looks like they developed a really good system. It's quite possible that they're working on all that shit in the background and we just don't know it yet. But I'm not 100% sure about that at all. So who knows? It's pure speculation. But anyway, let me get to Max real quick. Max, did you have a question or anything before you came up earlier or just came to hang out?
Hey, yeah, Seffy. So Akash, it sounds very useful, right? So I'm surprised that the price did not go any higher than I think, what, $8 is what you mentioned.
It was is the price, like the market cap is quite high compared to how much actual dollar value is transacted in the ecosystem. So I think that their main problem, if you want me to say why it hasn't had more uptake, is because number one, the total addressable market for people that want to use cloud services is relatively like, it's not retail users. It's not like everybody. Mm-hmm. And secondly, the last bull run, it just simply didn't have like infrastructure to like, that was smooth to easily deploy a container. And then the third reason is I think because like, even with whatever shit they had going on, they had very little actual usage of the system, even though it worked. Now with Cloudmos, this like it's changed appreciably to where it's like much better implemented and much easier to deploy. So you're seeing that like more transactions are happening, not transactions, but more usage of the cloud services network. But it's truly a legit like service network where you use the token to actually, you know, do CPU tasks, GPU tasks, whatever. And I think the other big thing that happened now compared to before was that USDC native, you know, was brought to that particular blockchain. So it's not bridged over or any of that shit. It's like native. So can actually get USDC.
Yeah.
So you want to pay for your, because here's the thing, businesses don't want to pay for cloud services using AKT. They want to use a stablecoin because they're like, well, how much is my service for the month? Oh, it's $30? Okay, I understand what that is, but I don't know what it is to hold Akash for 6 months and pray that it doesn't go up or down, right? So businesses want a stablecoin to deploy like actual functional shit. And then the benefit to the shareholder of Akash is I think some of the like transactional value on the network from cloud services goes to the staker, which then can now have a flywheel effect of people wanting to hold the AKT token essentially. So it's definitely, it made some progress compared to last bull run or whatever. So I think it's a reasonable hold at this point.
Anyway, yeah. So. It sounds like, I guess they are in position to really benefit from this next bull run. If we get that.
The other thing that they're in position to benefit from is the AI narrative. So like they're on the short list of people's AI tokens. Why? Because what they added earlier in the year was GPU capabilities. So you can run like AI models and like, you know, open source AI shit and on their GPUs clusters. So that became a popular reason also for the usage of that network. So it's like, okay, AI, this is a reason why you might want it. Cloud services, which, you know, maybe is not as interesting of a narrative for most people. But that's the thing about crypto. It's like the stuff that pumps is not necessarily the stuff that like is useful. Like the useful stuff is like questionable in terms of how much upside. That like people always say, we need utility in crypto. We need like to be able to do some real world shit. And then when the real world shit arrives, no one cares. And the reason is because, like, you know, it's like people would rather have a dream of something happening as opposed to something actually happening.
I've noticed right? that too. Like the scammier the coin, the higher, the harder it'll pump, right? But I think, like, I'm just hoping this time around, like all the actual useful coins, ones that have like real utility, will pump the hardest.
I think that one of the reasons why the utility things and the real world things may pump more is because, well, first off, not all of Akash's market cap is attributable to its actual utility. Let's kind of get that out of the way. Some of the market cap is just speculative bullshit, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
And then some of it is like AI narrative bullshit. So like every coin wants to benefit from these narratives and these memes at some level. But I think in a recession type of period where like we have really high inflation and people, you know, like retail is not who is necessarily the one buying a lot of the new retail is not the people buying all the shit right now. Like, I think there is a probability that like the higher utility, more useful crypto native stuff catches a bid more because you have like more crypto native dorks in here as opposed to like retail people. Maybe, I don't know. That's my theory at least. But like a lot of utility related stuff historically has not performed as well as you might think. Like Chainlink would be an example of that. It like, you know, it broke down below its Bitcoin chart and stopped growing. So like a lot of altcoins, like they have a tendency to like pump during bull markets and then pull back more than they ought to based on the fact that they have real utility. So you never really know, like with these coins, like,
yeah.
With utility, I have another way of looking at it too. So when you have a utility for something, like for example, let's say, I don't know, like what would be a good example? NFTs are a good example. When you have like an NFT with yield, and that yield is, let's say, 5%, right? Like if you bought the NFT and the yield is 5%, you're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get 5% utility for life or whatever. Maybe the price of the NFT goes up, but your relative you know yield goes down, but the actual yield that you bought the thing at is going to stay the same, right? Whereas the new guy that wants to get the NFT is like, hey, this yield is only 1%, right? So that like the utility function actually makes the top price of the stock or the crypto actually less, not more. So the way I look at it is always that utility sets the bottom price of an asset, whereas hype sets the top price of the asset. Does that make sense? Like, that's my theory.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah.
Because if you know that, like, I can get this much cloud services using Akash tokens, and if the price of, like, the Akash tokens, like, goes up too high, and now I'm a new buyer coming in to buy Akash tokens, I'm like, wait, this is kind of expensive. Why am I spending this on cloud services? That's why they had the USDC intermediary so that, like, the final pricing comes in dollars, and then you just pay the requisite amount in Akash tokens. Does that make sense? Like, it's like a way to like keep the price fixed, but still be able to use your token for that particular like transaction. Otherwise, people just tie the utility to the damn coin, and then they're like, "Ah, why would I want the coin? It's too high right now." So that's the thinking.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, appreciate, I guess, your thoughts on that. One other question that I had too is just like your whole like,
yeah.
Do you share like details on your mining rigs for Zeph? I mean, I am interested.
I can tell you whatever you want to know. Yeah. I'm not a genius at this, like Up is, but like I've got one working. If you want to know how to
do I'm like a total noob. I've never mined anything, and I just for fun, because I think you said most of us like to just see the price action sit in our kind of, you know, hands.
It's It's profitable now. Like, so what I put together is, so I put a, so if you have a little slip of paper, I can tell you what I got.
Sure. Cool.
I've got, an AMD 5 motherboard. It's like an MSI brand. It's pretty cheap. I think it was like under $100. I don't know what, like Pro A620 is what I bought. Apparently it's not the best one to get. They make some for overclocking and stuff that can handle more temperatures, so you might want to check on that. But an AMD 5 motherboard is like the new style one for the newer chips. And the reason I got it was because I figured if I'm going to own this computer in the future, I might as well get a computer that's like sort of future-proof for the next 10 years or whatever, as opposed to like AMD 4 motherboards, which like have been around and are now deprecated. You can get them much cheaper. Like, and you can also get the AMD chips cheaper for the small, like the lower end ones. But I figured, all right, I'm going to just splurge for this thing and go for it. So I got this motherboard. But you could get the AMD 4 motherboard and a Ryzen like 3900 AMD chip with it instead. But I went with the AMD 5 and I got the Ryzen 9 series, and I got the 7900. And after doing some more research, I should have got the 7900X. Which allows a little bit of overclocking more. So 7900X would be the one you'd get with it. And then you need like two strips of DDR5 RAM. The brand I picked up, which seems to be working okay, are Corsair DDR5 Pro. I don't know if it's the problem with these chips or my motherboard or AMD. I don't know what, but this is the slowest booting computer I've ever had in my life. I mean, I have computers back from like 15 years ago that boot faster than this. So I don't know what I did. Wow. Like, I don't know which of the components I stuck in here that caused that effect. I suspect maybe it's the RAM, someone said. Like, maybe it's something to do with the RAM. I have no idea. It's weird that it boots so slow, though. You're like, what in the hell is going on here? It's like 2 minutes later, you're still waiting for it to boot. It's weird before you see like any information pop up. So, you know, so caveat would be like maybe the crucial RAM or something's not right or whatever. Or maybe it's the AMD chip itself and they have to like firmware update this or something. So just buyer beware. There's a little bit of that going on. But, you know, once the rig is running, I don't care how long it takes to load up. So I'm not worried about it. Okay. The next thing I picked up was a Thermaltake power supply. It's like the smart 500 watt. It's called like the 80 plus, I believe is called the name.
Okay.
Smart 80 plus, and that was pretty cheap, like I think like 40-50 bucks. And apparently if you get wire splitters, you can technically put two rigs onto one of these power supplies, because you definitely don't need 500 watts. And these power supplies work best when they're running like at a sweet spot. Like there's an efficiency sweet spot. If you use too little power, you're just wasting some of it as in the form of heat, and if you use too much, you're wasting it in form of like, again, heat and inefficiency. So like most of these power supplies, like, you know, they like if it's a 500 watt power supply, its highest efficiency might be like a 3 to 350 watt power draw. So you can kind of look into that a little bit if you really want to just fine tune things. Does it matter that much? Whatever. I just got the 500 watt because like if I want to use this as a computer later, it has enough power. I can run hard drives, GPU, whatever off of it. And there'll be plenty of overhead, you know, excess wattage available, but like it may not be the most efficient, you know, solution for this particular thing. What else did I have put in here? It helps to have some like flashable, like USB flash drive, like maybe like a 16 gig or so is enough if you intend to flash like HiveOS onto it, which is like a monitoring software. I think it's pretty cool to use HiveOS. I use the flashing thing and I run this off my flash drive for now, and it works pretty well. The other thing you can use is a small like SSD drive, which is like, they make these slot mounted ones. Like I'm clearly old, 'cause like I was used to the SATA like cable hardware where you use a cable and you plug it into a SATA hard drive. Now they make these little bitty ones like for $10. And I think, let me tell you the name of this real quick. It's by Union Memory. And it is called it's 128 gig. It's called a L-E-N pin. Well, shit, I don't know the name of this is exactly. Anyway, but it's this tiny little hard drive that you just slot into the motherboard. There's no wires or anything. It's just like you slide it right in. So one thing you'd want with that is like the adapter so you can flash it. And if you have the adapter, you can actually technically flash like an operating system right onto it. But in for this computer, I got a Windows serial number, and I had a flash drive that had Windows on it. Apparently they make those also where you can get like some third-party sell Windows for like $10. Somebody up was telling me about those. I bought Windows for like $100 at Best Buy or some shit, so I got ripped off. But you want to get like an operating system on it, you can do that. Now, you don't have to have an operating system on this necessarily. Like, Max, do you have a PC of your own already, or you don't have one? Like a Windows PC?
I don't.
Oh, so what do you use, Mac or something, or use some
I
other?
I do, yeah. I use Mac.
So if you're using a Mac, you can technically just Hive OS, HIVEOS, if you go to their website and you start setting up a rig, it'll allow you to flash a USB drive using, or the small SSD drive. You can flash it using their little software, and they do have Mac software for it. So you don't need to own a PC or Windows to do this at all. You could use your Mac to actually flash the BIOS onto a little drive, and then just plug that in, and then it'll run. I used a mouse, keyboard, and screen that I plugged into this thing just to kind of troubleshoot it, make sure everything works, you know, set up the BIOS and stuff like that. But it wasn't, I took some extra steps and wasted some money doing this just because I wanted this to be a functioning Windows computer at the end of the day. So I spent a little extra for the Windows and shit, but it's up to you. You don't need all that. And then, the last thing you need is, you need a heat sink for the chip. And what I would recommend going with is, at the bare minimum, a heat pipe based CPU fan for that particular chip. So what to find that, you just go on Amazon, you type in Ryzen, 7900 or whatever the number is of the chip. And then you'll say like, what fan goes with this? And then they'll pop up some fans for AMD5 motherboards. And it's basically like a dual fan that's blowing air through a set of heat pipes that are attached to the chip and everything. So then you have to pull off some screws on your motherboard, attach this thing, and then you're on your way. And these things work quite well. So it's basically a heat pipe based dual fan that you can use. And I don't know what the exact brand name of this thing, because it's like, they make a bunch of different ones.
About the heat sinks, so the processors normally they have a rating, right? Like the TPE, it's called, and it's like 120 watts. Well, I think what you have is like 100 watts or something, right? So the heat sink also has the same specification. So you just have to get one that's at least at that figure or higher to get the heat away, right? So it's got
and usually it's any heat sink that is going to be like AMD 5 board compatible with heat pipes should be pretty good. Like most of them are pretty, just go to whatever, like look at reviews on Amazon. There's like two or three of them.
Yeah.
Fairly
cheaper. It's like,
They're pretty cheap. They're like $30 or something, $40 maybe. Like where it gets expensive is if you start going water cooling. So there are ways, if you want to go crazy, like really cook the chip, like at higher temperatures, you can kind of eke out more power, processing power out of it by like using a water cooler based system. And that's where you like screw the water cooler adapter onto the motherboard, and it's sitting on top of the chip, and then you have a little box that you plug in or whatever that's essentially a chiller.
But honestly, these water cooling things, usually if these guys mod these PCs with all the RGB LEDs and everything, with the water cooling, you get the dust out, right? So you basically isolate everything. It doesn't dust up that easily. So I think water cooling is much more of a use case for that rather than, because air cooling works just fine, right?
Right. So yeah. And then the last thing, I guess, is the case. They do make cases that are like just literally just the floor of the PC plus like a wall on the side of it, just to mount your motherboard. If you know, that's another like you know, $20-$30. Some people just take the motherboard and just stick it on the box it comes in and just sit on top of that. I'm not so sure I'm comfortable doing that in my house where the, you know, I want the box to catch fire or some shit if something happens. So I'm not interested in like having the thing blow up on me. So like, I didn't do that. I went ahead and got like a simple metal open air case. I probably should have gotten an actual case for this, because if I'm going to use it sometimes as a regular computer, it would have made sense to just buy an actual case. But I went the cheaper route. And the other thing about if you buy a case is realize that like you need to have one that fits the, if you get a full size case with the whole surround and everything, you want to make sure that your power supply fits inside of it. And you want to make sure the fan thing, when you attach it to the motherboard, fits inside the whole case, because that can get...
Shouldn't be a problem as long as you get an ATX one.
Yes. Yep. So, an ATX, yeah. Like mid-size case minimum, I think.
Yeah, it's the micro ATX where you get the troubles with the larger fans. It's like if you have these 120 millimeter fans for the CPU, they don't fit, you know.
I would assume that most of the fans are built to fit in sort of like standard ATX case.
Yeah, the big ones do for the ATX, but micro ATX, you have to be careful. There's a...
I believe my case, my little stand thing is a micro ATX stand. It's a simple, like, metal, like, truly just a metal thing with, like, screw holes in it. Like, it's just nothing to it, really.
Yeah, so
the whole thing is open.
It's the power supply also go in these two formats is also ATX and micro ATX. So the micro ATX power supply is also smaller. You won't get the ATX one into the micro ATX housing.
Right. So that's the thing to be wary of is like if you want to put it in a case and you want it to be a certain size, or if you have a really dusty environment and you don't want to deal with like dust going through your, you know, your fans and stuff, clogging them up over time, then you could do the water cooling and, you know, all that shit if you want to worry about it. But it's not that critical. I mean, the goal here is to pay like maybe $750 for, you know, a high-end AMD thing, $750 to $800, have that as a usable computer when you're done with it. Be able to mine hopefully like, I don't know, $10,000 worth of Zeph on this thing over a period of a year and then call it a day. Like, you know, like that's basically my plan. So, but that's assuming, of course, reasonably lofty goals for the actual price of the coin and everything. So, you know, think about that in your decision. But
I got myself today a 3950X, the secondhand one out of eBay for like $300 CPU. Okay.
That should be good.
Yeah, that's pretty decent. And last year I built actually a little block house in my garden. It's a pretty big garden, so it's for guests. And I'm going to heat it this winter with that thing just to keep it above freezing, right? So,
that's what I'm thinking of. I might get a few more of these and just kind of like line them up and just do it. Just because it seems like the ROI is probably going to be decent on it.
Even if it takes a year, you get a free PC, right? Whatever.
Yeah, even if it's just like the price of half of the PC, like let's say the difficulty just shot up like crazy and all I made was like the price of 50% of this thing, it's still a free PC, basically.
Yeah.
More or less, right? It's like the price of a used PC at that point. No big deal.
Now, I guess, you know, it's not that easy for like big mining farms on the CPU mining to ramp up that easily, because it's not like ASIC kind of scalable, you know. It's not that simple, I guess, you know.
But still. Oh, and before I like forget, if anyone's going to bother with Ceph, like I think it's not going to stay at this price for very long. Like just a warning right ahead before we chat about all this and people are like, oh, maybe I'll buy Ceph, and then they're going to get it $10 higher. Like if you're going to bother, like, you know, under $50, which is prior peak, is I think if you're going to bother, like get it while it's low. I think like that's, you know, like it's like reasonable financial advice that if you're buying anything, buy low, not high. But I think the size of the new user base and the amount of hashing power, the number of videos out there, the number of new users to all the different platforms like Twitter, Discord, and even the like followers on Zephyr Protocol's Twitter account has just absolutely skyrocketed. It just goes to show you, I'm it's not that easy to get like 15 to 20,000 followers, and they were able to do so within like weeks. So the number of people that are like talking about Zephyr and like discussing it in all sorts of different communities has gone up dramatically. So the odds of this breaking prior high are, I would say in my head, it's 100%, all else, or like 99.999%, like asymptotic to 100 would be my likelihood of breaking prior high. So, and we're about to do that probably today, that's my guess.
Wait, I knew this dip. What's the ETH? Long.
What's that now? All-time high is 52, I believe. We got to 52 like last week. Or no, 2 weeks ago, I think, 2 weeks ago. Time flies when you're having fun. But yeah, it was like 52, and then it dropped to about 24, which is like a 60% retracement. I picked up some at like 27. It took me a little while to sort of move some cash around and move it over there. So I actually doubled my initial cash investment at 27, even though I originally got it at 6, because I was like, okay, this is like legit. It's the real deal. And I probably got too little to begin with. And so I just kind of like, topped off this thing and then figured like rest of it I can do in mining if I want to throw more money at this. Because like, if I think about it, like, well, if I get like 5 more miners, you know, like at 800 a pop or whatever, and then maybe I can sell those for 50% of that value, you know, maybe in a couple of years, in the meantime, I can mine the heck out of this thing. You know, that might make another, you know, side, like 5 of these would probably make like, you know, 50K worth or something if my price predictions are accurate. So, not, you know, it's like that's another way to approach this if you don't have a, like just simply owning the token is probably the simplest thing. And another thing too is like most people that are going to mine something like this, a lot of people are going to go ahead and like buy a little token as well. So like that's what leads to some of the price action and stuff. Right. But,
but I mean, the mission, like energy consumption, is it, I mean, I know that's probably a hard question to answer.
It's not much. It's not much at this level, like with one CPU. I mean, it's probably running like, I'm guessing this sucker is running like under 150 watts at this moment. And, so it's like running a light bulb or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, okay. It's not too bad. Yeah. Yeah. Like in the winter, if it's cold where you live, like it'll warm up a little bit too. So that takes care of a little bit of your heating bill simultaneously. So it's even less.
Cool.
It depends on the, it depends on the temperature where you're at though, obviously.
But. Yeah. Yeah. Steffi, really appreciate the, all your comments, thoughts, and those, details that you shared.
And there's pretty good YouTube videos about this stuff too. So people have put together, like, if you want to get into the weeds a little bit and you haven't built a computer in a long time or something, like I had to kind of dig it up again because I haven't built a computer in like, I don't know, 10 plus years.
Yeah.
It's never bothered. I was just using Macs the whole time.
Okay. Well, yeah, thank you very much. I'm going to hop off. I'm going to just hang out and listen, but
yeah. Have a good one. Man. Yeah. Yeah. Stealthproof, did you have any comments? You ready to send this thing or what? I don't know if he's there.
yeah. Sorry, buddy. Sorry, I'm washing the dishes. So I just wanted to ask you about what your rig was, like the full specs. I'm mining. I'm thinking of overclocking now. I just wanted to ask you what your processor was again.
Mine is the Ryzen 9. And it's the actual number is like a 7900X.
And you're getting 15 kilohash?
And I'm getting 15.5 with a little bit of overclocking.
Okay, Intel.
It can probably be pushed higher, but I haven't experimented with pushing the limit on it.
Okay, yeah, I'm getting about 3 kilohash, so I'm going to try to maybe upgrade or do some overclocking, but...
Yeah, I think like if you already have a PC and you've already paid for it, you know, hash whatever you get out of it. Like, why not, right?
Right.
But if you're gonna do a new one, like I would definitely go the route of an AMD chip for this. It's more efficient and it's more cost effective to build one with AMD for this particular purpose. Oh. The latest AMD Ryzens are pretty efficient too, as far as like power consumption and like heat production or whatever. So that can be a plus as well.
The Intel CPUs are very inferior when it comes to CPU mining.
Yep, that's
even,
what I heard.
Even the newer generations.
The other trick, too, if Max is still listening as well, you do not want to use single-channel RAM. So on your motherboard, you know how there's like 2 slots for RAM? You don't want to get one DDR5 chip that has like, let's say 16 gig. You want 2 of them So usually most of the chips they sell them as dual channel in a packet, but single channel is apparently substantially inferior to dual channel for whatever reason. I don't know why.
And remember, to turn on your AMD Expo profile on your RAMs in your motherboard BIOS settings, or else you will not get the correct speeds on them.
Yeah, you have to use AMD X profiles. Yes, that's correct. You have to tweak a few things for AMD. Like, there's a couple of things I did. One was like increase the temperature threshold to like 80 degrees. And then I simply dropped the, like, you can go into the, you have to dig into it. It's a little tricky, but you dig into it and it'll have a thing where you can change the amount of voltage on every single core of the chip. And I dropped each of them by 30 points out of three. Like, you can do plus or minus 300. And I brought it down by about 30 points. I could probably push it a little higher, lower in terms of voltage, and see if that, you know, does the trick. But I'm not really an expert at overclocking. And I think my BIOS, the board that I got, is not a great overclocking board. So, like, I don't know, it wasn't really the best of settings. That's what I was telling Max earlier. Like, I probably should have researched the motherboard a little bit better. MSI makes some that are a little bit more like built for overclocking and have more of the features and shit.
So if you want to go for an overclocking board, you should go for the B670, I think it's called, or 570.
Okay.
Chipset.
Yep.
Because all those boards has more VRAM on it, so they are better capable to cutting up the voltage in smaller parts.
Ooh, okay.
I have liquid cooling in my current PCs, and it's in the basement, so I want to increase the temperature actually, so my basement's warmer this winter. Maybe I should have gone with liquid cooling, but yeah, I'm gonna start looking into AMD.
Well, liquid cooling. Remember, even liquid cooling is it's sending the heat into the room. It's not sending it out somewhere else. So yeah, no matter where the heat's coming from, it's going to be in your room, unless you're literally venting it outdoors, which, you know, it's a different thing. So yeah, water cooled versus fan, it's still staying in the room. So don't worry about that part. Assuming you want to heat the room up, you know.
Which is a good use case for Zeph, because you can actually replace your HVAC units with miners if you'd like to. So.
Yeah, that's really cool. I don't know if there's a YouTube video on that. I'm actually gonna YouTube that. But
I've got one bedroom in the house with a big window here, and it's maybe like I would say it's like maybe a 12 by 14 bigger bedroom upstairs. I've got this thing parked in there, and if I close the door, it'll pretty much warm up this room like by itself. So like you can imagine, like one of these can warm up a room in the house if you want to, except if you run it overclocked and at a higher temperature, the fans are going to run more and they're noisy. So these aren't too noisy, these heat pipe fans, but like if you put two or three of these machines, it's going to be annoying. So if you don't want to have the noise, if when I ran this AMD stock, it was super quiet and it was getting me 14,200 hash, and it was completely dead silent. So to eke out like an extra 1,000 of hash, I got the thing to be really noisy. So, you know, realistically, like I could put a lot more in these in my house if I don't overclock them. In terms of like,
so I'm actually GPU mining and CPU mining at the same time. I'm GPU mining on a different project and CPU mining is Zeph. So it's like working out really well. It hasn't, you know, crashed for weeks and weeks. So I'm actually just thinking of building another PC. This is awesome, guys.
Yeah, if you've been doing this kind of thing for a while, yeah, you know more than I do, then it won't take you long to figure this shit out for sure. But yeah, I was thinking of probably just getting a bit more of these 7900 chips. I'm liking them. There seems like they're a pretty good balance between like future resale amount, you know, like future resale value plus the amount of hashing we're getting out of it. Like if you start getting into like weirder chips, like thread rippers and stuff like that, and you start getting into like much more expensive chips, like the ones that are like $3,000 and stuff, you can get crazy, you know, hash rates of like 200,000 and shit with ASICs and like big time like server chips. The problem is like, who are you going to sell that shit to? A gaming chip, like, you know, like you could buy like, I think three of them or four of them for the exact same price. And you can get like, you know, four different entire devices, and you could then resell those devices at a future time. Or the flip side would be like, if you get like a single very big chip, which they do make big ones like $3,000 and stuff like that. I think it's a 7950 or so. There's some other ones that are like crazy pricey. And you can go to bigger ones, but then it's like, A, who are you going to sell that to later? That's a question mark. Maybe a smaller market for it. And then two, it's the benefit of that, though, would be like you only have to have one supply, one motherboard, and you're getting way more hashing power. So to some extent, like when you go with this more devices, the downside would be like you're replicating hardware. When you go to the more expensive devices, those chips are rarer, I guess, and they charge way more for them. So a lot of the ancillary shit, like the power supply and the fan, whatever, this is all cheap stuff comparatively. And like, I don't think it makes too much sense to like bury too much money in the primary chip unless you really, really want that for some reason. Or like maybe you're like really pressed for space. Maybe that might be a reason to get like a really expensive singular chip, as far as I can tell. So which is not unreasonable if you live in an apartment or something. Maybe you would want like a really expensive singular chip. I don't know.
Is the price difference on the 7900 and 7950X really so big?
It's I think it's huge. I think I saw one for like $3,000 or something. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's like a big leap in like in capability and threads. Or was it 7950 or something like that? I don't remember what it was, but I don't. These numbers start to. Like I start losing track of them after a while, but anyway, yeah. But you can find some more powerful chips for sure, like Intel Xeon server chips. But it's all about the threads when it comes to CPU mining for this. But the other reason and not to go too crazy.
Level 3 cache. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. The other reason not to go too crazy with spending too much on this sort of thing is because like difficulty continues to increase. I don't know how profitable mining becomes like 2 years from now, to where if you sink a lot of money into a device, like, are you going to make that back? Whereas with something like this, you know, you can offload this and sell it very quickly, and you'd get probably eBay values, usually like 40% off if you sell it used or whatever. Just keep the boxes and shit, and then kind of like, you know, you could probably sell it to somebody. Or if you plan on using the computer, I mean, who the hell needs like a $3,000 Threadripper, you know, computer? It's not necessarily, it's not even like a better gaming device, because like if you have a, like if you're doing gaming and stuff, you probably want more GPU compute, not necessarily like a, you know, hyper crazy like server grade CPU. So it becomes like this thing that you own that you have to get rid of at some point if you don't want to mine. Well, that was my theory at least. Have you been mining anything, Bruce? Have you tried this?
I have been doing a lot of research, and
it's pretty easy.
I can't talk too much about it. This is recorded, but
okay.
I want to have more than one miner.
Let me see. Yeah, yeah.
And I've been looking at the 7950X and also the X3D, because it has the twice amount of L3 cache, but I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I didn't do too much research. I just sort of aped into some random hardware. I probably could have done better if I was a little bit more careful, honestly. But the chip is fine. The fan is fine. I'm not so sure why it takes such a gigantic delay to boot up this damn thing. I've never seen anything like it. Like, it's the weirdest boot time I've ever seen.
So what the OS are you running?
Well, right now I'm just running the Hive OS, which is just like on, you know, flash drive or whatever. But I have Windows running on an SSD, so if I want to swap to that, I just take out the USB drive, and I boot to Windows if I want to.
So you're booting from a USB, that's why it's so slow.
Well, no, it was that slow even from the SSD on Windows. It's just super slow for some reason. Apparently, it's a problem with either this AMD
just
chip or the RAM or something.
Unplug that SSD and see what it does on boot up.
Yeah, you can do that, or you can go into the BIOS and see if there's a fast.
Yeah, just get the thing up. It's just one screw.
Mm.
There's also often a fast boot up setting in the BIOS.
Yeah, no, this SSD was so cheap. It's only like $10. Like, it's the one that Up found for me. It's like $10, and it's not even long enough to fit one screw. It's like literally half a board. So like, it's just plugged in. It's just sitting, flipping around loosely because it's not long enough to put a screw in. It's kind of funny. The board has like screw holes, but like this chip is not long enough to actually reach the screw holes.
When did you when hilarious. Was the last time you did surgery? Just out of curiosity.
Operate on somebody? Oh, I don't know, like maybe a week or two ago. Why?
Just wondering how much this loosely flapping around in your patients.
Yeah, there could be some things. There's definitely some things floating around in there. Yeah, it's a funny little thing. It's just not even screwed down. It's like this chip is so small, or that little board is so small that for this SSD card. It was super cheap. That was like $12 or whatever, or $11. So who am I to complain? But yeah, like if you get the SSDs, by the way, and you'd rather do that than the flash drive, which is probably better for long term, you need to get a small adapter to actually be able to flash that drive using a Mac or other PC, because what I have is Windows on that drive, and then I have the actual like Hive OS running on a little USB drive, which apparently will fail eventually after a period of writes. So I don't know how long that's going to last. But I mean, even those USB drives are like, I mean, shit, like five of them was like $22. So like, you know, whatever. If one dies, I'll just reboot it onto there again. It's not a big deal.
Hey, Seffy, there's just one thing I saw the other day. I was doodling around with the source code of Zeph, and I figured that they actually use a protocol. And I think it comes from another proof of work coin where it was implemented called Grin, and it's called Dandelion++. What it basically does is it's a protocol that kind of obfuscates the privacy on the transaction in the node network. So they wanted to implement that on Bitcoin, but they never did. It was originally built for Bitcoin, but it's not in there. So basically they make sure if someone transmitted transactions and one node's transmitting it to another one, they use this protocol to basically obfuscate that, which is pretty interesting. So you can't really see who actually sent a transaction in the end of the day, right?
Right.
Well, it's interesting. It's built in there. No one talks about it. It's probably nothing big, but it's adding to privacy. Monero doesn't have it.
Interesting. So they had an added little bonus privacy to it.
Yeah, I think they just copied it. It's working on that Grin coin, and I guess some dev came from that implementation, right? They just ported it over. Looks like that to me.
Interesting. A little bit of like forensic code review.
Yeah, well, there's actually a research paper, and they really made some fuss in 2018 about this. And no one actually, there was even a BIP for Bitcoin proposed, but they didn't care because, yeah, it's not private anyway. So no one cared about Bitcoin, right?
Yep. Yep. I'm assuming all else is equal and the thing works really well long term and has no particular issues, like, yeah, the upside looks really good. It looks like the generally like sort of market's moving now too, because like pretty much everything's trickling upwards with BTC rising. So it's like, it's almost, you could throw a dart at a dartboard and anything's going to go up. I think some things will just simply go up a lot more than others.
ETH looks like shit though.
Yeah, ETH looks pretty weak actually. So what happened was I bought some ETH like last week or 2 weeks ago. And then when I noticed Zeph, I'm like, ah, whatever. I sold whatever little bit of ETH I got, even for the breakout. And I'm like, let's just buy some Zeph instead. So yeah, ETH is sort of sitting at resistance, and so is like Atom. They're all kind of like parked there, ready to move, but like they haven't gone crazy. Like the odds that they're, if BTC goes up, that ETH and Dogecoin and all the other things aren't going to move is low. They're probably going to move. But the question is like when, and like, why hasn't it moved more than it has? Is it because like Arbitrum and Optimism and whatever else, they're sort of like stealing the thunder of the ETH token? It's possible. So it's quite possible that like the value accrual for ETH is not strong enough compared to the upside multiples of a lot of the other coins. Because, you know, the thing is, price is a meme. And when you get to a certain level and the price isn't moving, people just sit there and scratch their heads and wonder, like, what's going on? And back when the last time ETH moved big time, like, you know, it was during that run that like some of these other projects like Polygon and all these other Optimism and Arbitrum, whatever, these sort of emerged afterwards, sort of like to become popular. but like you are much better off as a Matic holder than you were a ETH holder last run. And yeah, I think this,
and don't forget gas fees are that low at the moment that it's actually not deflationary, right? So this whole narrative around we change the proof of stake and high gas fees will make it deflationary doesn't play out, right? It's not.
Yeah, it's this run, like I think you have multiple good choices in Cosmos that are going to do fine. Like Say Network is going to do fine, probably. You know, these VC ones tend to pump. Kujira is there. Injective is there. What else we got? We've got
Rick.
What's that? Oh,
Rack.
Oh, Rack. Yeah. Oh, that's a good coin. Yeah, RAC. so you got the Rack coin for the Rack FM guys here. You
Raccoon
have,
Supply is not related to Rack FM.
It's oh, okay.
No relation.
Oh, yeah. No relation at all. So, yeah. Then there's a lot of different ecosystems. Even Luna's starting to pick up now. So there's a lot of places for people to throw money at walls to make them go up. So, you know, I don't know how much like ETH is going to catch up when you have so many different options out there as far as interesting lower market cap projects that have higher multiples. So, you know, but at the same time, it's like it's when the normies show up is when all of the previous coins tend to pop because like they don't know all these new things, like they haven't gone down the rabbit hole of all these different exchanges and they don't know what to buy. They just see millions of coins and they pop up in Coinbase or whatever. They have no idea. So they have a tendency to sort of like buy the top 10 at that point. So you know that like the retail is here when like Dogecoin and Ethereum and everything start moving. That's my thesis on the older coins sort of like.
Hey, Steffi, since you would know just the question about the OsmoCon, right? What happened there with Osmosis? I mean, just roughly, what's the talk? I mean, there's Notional now and everyone's getting pissed off. And I mean, what did they do, basically? They just devalued something or they gave someone coins for free or what happened?
Oh, I don't know. It's just, that's just Bruce and playing around with all the stupid controversies that happen at these things and just making jokes.
Yeah, but I guess something.
Well, Notional, what happened was like some sort of infighting happened between that in that company. Oh, Notional DAO, by the way, is just it's a group. It's a company that like run by Jacob, and he basically has a bunch of dudes that work for him. I think like 20 employees or something. And this is out of, I don't know if he's in Thailand or where the hell he is. And what the deal is they're just, they validate for a lot of chains and they do a lot of like, you know, like bug fixes and shit like that for a lot of the Cosmos chains. And for some reason, one of the partners in that company like lost his shit and started fighting with everybody or something. And I'm not sure who did what to who with like whatever. And then so like next thing you know, he's showing pictures of them in court trying to break up the company and stuff. And it's just a mess. So I don't know. It doesn't. I'm not sure it really materially impacts anyone right now, but it's just more nonsense that, you know, crypto nonsense.
Their validator service, they had this like all nodes, like validator as a service, right? That's the concept.
Yeah, Notional doesn't do like white label services. Notional just simply validates for lots of different Cosmos chains. That's their thing.
Okay.
And they also do some code reviews and stuff. So they're paid for different functions, but they're basically a big team of developers. And I don't know why the, like, I don't know what the controversy is. I'm sure we can get Jacob on and find out his side of the story as far as like what happened.
How many shareholders do they have? Do you know that?
I don't know. Like, I think there's like the one of the owners that lost his shit owns like 30% of the company. And okay. Probably Jacob is some fraction of it. And I think maybe there's two or three owners there.
Yeah. Two or three should be fine. Anything over three is like a recipe for trouble.
Yeah, it's just hard. It's just unwieldy managing a big group of owners. But I don't know. Who knows? Yeah. Like, do we really want to know what the drama is? Not really.
No.
Happened. Yeah. Something happened. They're fighting about something, and that's the end of it. Like, but it's not going to really affect like any direct Cosmos
let's
thing.
Talk about soggy biscuits.
Soggy biscuits.
Oh, I missed it. So, what was ears for a half year? You didn't hear anything about it from him, right?
If anyone wants to, before like the price of Zeph moons or whatever the hell it is, like if you want to know something about this thing before it goes up too high, you probably want to ask now if you need research or something. So like hop up, feel free to ask questions, whatever. we can fill you in on what it is, but like, yeah, it's there's a reason why it's going up, and it's super, super interesting as a project, and that's why you have so many nerds like mining it and whatever. I don't think the current market cap is going to last very long at all. Like, I think this is a fairly straightforward, like,
yeah, it's gonna
to me, it's, yeah, it's a standard 1 billion to 10 billion market cap type project as far as like I can see.
You just wait for the other exchanges coming
out of, yeah, world. Like, the only financial advice I would give is like, don't fumble the ball. Whatever you do, like, don't fuck it up. Like, don't buy low, don't buy things high and sell low and do all sorts of wacky shit. Like, if you don't know what you're doing, just like, the best thing is just to like, don't look at your wallet, don't look at anything, and just come back later. Because like, if you're going to trade your way like a genius to infinity, like, you can do that on certain coins, especially in bear markets, and it's a little bit up and down chop. But man, like, in bullish markets, you start, you know, playing trading games, thinking you're some kind of genius or whatever, and the only thing you're going to do is lose money. It's just like, and then don't use leverage and this and that. You're just, you know, just a waste of money. Like, basically something like Zephyr is already a leveraged crypto play in that it's a high risk, high reward type time frame. And so like, you're already like, that's the reason why many people get like small cap things in stock market, crypto, whatever. They're okay with the risk of things going to zero for whatever reason. But at the same time, they want the high upside. So like, allocate accordingly, be careful with your money and whatever, and don't put all your eggs in one basket, as they say. Just because I like this thing does not mean I have more than like 0.1% of my portfolio in this, by the way. Like, full disclosure, it's not like I've aped in with all the money I ever owned. You know, it's a tiny amount. In fact, it's so tiny that like, I made sure it was small enough that I didn't cause any kind of market slippage or like, you know, it's noticeable that it's me or anything like that. Like, it's a small amount that I put into this thing. I just think the project is super interesting, and like, it's a high utility project that I can use long term, even afterwards, going in and out of this system. So I think it's interesting enough that it's worth talking about. But none of these things are worth putting like your life savings or something into. It doesn't matter how high the upside might be. The downside can be zero, depending on, you know, what kind of flaws happen in an ecosystem of crypto and stuff. So
it's interesting though that these proof of work systems, if you're in early, they just offer you a better risk reward than any ICO from a stock.
This
company.
Is true. This is true. Yep. Yeah. Because the selling pressure is different. And yeah. I mean, just think about it this way. If I'm making, let's say I make $30 worth of Zeph per month at current prices to mine this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, my mining rig cost me like, say, $700 or $800, right? So if I think to myself, how high is the price of this coin going to have to go for me to pay back this rig, let's say in a year? You know, you could argue that like, that might be the theoretical value of the coin at some base level. Because some mixture of the cost of electricity and the expenses of your resources have something to do with what the miner perceives as what the coin price ought to be, right? So they're not going to sell immediately because, like, why would you? Like, what are they, like, strapped for electricity or something, I suppose. But you might see some selling pressure for expenses and stuff for miners. But when it comes to – and then you have other miners that are just vampire. Like, they don't care about the coin. They're like – they just pointed at whatever new coin there is. They're like, ooh, I'm going to go mine that. So there are some people that will sell. That's not what it is. But, like, the selling pressure, even if it's the full daily output of Zephyr, like 8,000 a day, which is on the relatively high side, the total supply that's out in the wild right now is only 2.5 million or something. And something like half of that is locked up in team tokens, and half of it's locked up, and some fraction is locked up in like 700,000 in the reserve. So ZRS, yeah. So you see, a lot of it's not in the open market. So price discovery is happening on a relatively small fraction of the coins. And this is where you get like wild supply shocks in crypto, where the price can just absolutely moon like 10x and then do another 10x and then do another 10x. It's what Caspa did. It's what Bitcoin did. It's what Ethereum did. All of the proof of work systems originally did this. And so like, well, not all. I take that back. There are proof of work systems that don't take off, not interesting. You know, people mine them for a while and nothing happens. So don't take this to mean that like every proof of work system does fine. That's not the case. I think this one has special properties. It's like the mixture of privacy, plus a stablecoin, and the ability to do that within the ecosystem without going to centralized exchange, the fact that it's a known secure hashing mechanism like RandomX, the fact that it's reasonably decentralized using CPU mining, and like the fact that it started on really small, sketchy DEXs, I mean, or centralized exchanges where like only nerds go. These are all really bullish for the early user base of this thing. Plus, a lot of the coins are being owned by miners. Almost all miners are crypto native dorks like us. And the reality is that like they understand that these things go up a lot in value. And most of them, like spec miners, as Up calls them, they'll hold their coins because they expect the price to rise. It's like the Caspa people. Otherwise, why does Caspa keep going up and up and up and up? And it's like the FIB extensions for this coin are like at the 1,000 and 3,000 level. I did FIB extensions actually on the Caspa chart. I posted that today. And it gives you an idea of like just the first pump. Like if you just take the first pump and just draw extensions all the way up to the 4.0 FIB, they just go up, up, and away. Caspa hit all of them on the way up and is still climbing over time. So like you just have to use your imagination. But these things are word of mouth too. Like it's people, telling their friends, social media, whatever. Like the bigger the pump, the next pump is, the more likely you get continuation for the one after that and the one after that. So there's something about the price meme effect where the extreme pumps draw in tons of eyeballs, and those eyeballs are watching for a dip. And when they see that dip, they start buying it up. And so that really extreme price action is really important to the adoption of these networks, because like more than just like advertising other bullshit, price is the strongest attractor of new users, like even more so than whatever utility your project has. Anyway, just some thoughts.
Yeah, Zephy, one question. What do you think if, let's say, a KuCoin or something like Poloniex or someone wants to onboard this? What do you think a market maker would need as a supply to actually be able to make a market on such an exchange?
I'm not sure, but like I know the team held aside like 500,000 coins pre-mine, and I'm not sure like what they're going to be parking on those. I guess the bigger the exchange, the more liquidity they would need. So I would think it's probably, I don't know, 10 mil worth or something. I'm not sure what they usually put on these things lately. For these small microcaps, no idea.
It would be interesting because that's gonna really, really bump the whole game up, right?
It'll be a good question next time we have one of our devs on, is like that know this sort of shit. Either Chad or maybe one of the devs, like Kujira devs or whoever, is like pick their brain on how what the details of this sort of thing are in terms of liquidity requirements.
I think Chad Barraford is. Basically said they don't want to go on to any more exchanges and provide liquidity. I think they got ripped off from Binance or something like that. Sounded at least like
yeah. No, their sense is like, I think Osmosis did the same thing. They're like, fuck it. If they want to list it, they can list it if they feel like it. If not, whatever. We'll just be our own thing. So like, it's really a more organic growth though when you don't list it early. Because then only the people that really want the coin will actually go and get it. And these are people that are willing to hold long term.
Yeah, so also, Seth, don't forget, if you give these guys coins, they will dump on you, right? I mean, they will suppress your price on the downside whenever they feel so pleased.
Right. The exchanges just profit off of your coins, basically, by selling them. Like, because the exchange is there to make money, so they're going to make it wherever they feel like they can, and it will affect the upper end boundary of your price. So on the one hand, it's like visibility on the exchange brings in a lot of new users. On the other hand, does it bring the right type of user in, and B, like the ones that are going to hold, and like B, does it, like you said, does it wind up leading to sell pressure later? Because that was a complaint that people had about MEXC, is that like MEXC, they would take your coins from your project and they'd dump on your ass. And the good thing about this coin is like that it started on MEXC, so whatever dumping that they're going to do, they might have already done most of it. so like it's apparently MEXC is like a notorious for this, supposedly.
Yeah. One thing people should consider, if you plan to hold it, just get it off the exchange, right? So they can't gamble with your coins, because you never know. I mean, what's coming to light now, what Binance did and what they all did, right? They just embezzled user funds. It's regular business for them, I guess. So wouldn't be surprised that they trade against the holders.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So let me pull up the mining hash right now. Yeah, see, we're back up to 2.5 gigahash. I was noticing that the difficulty on my miner was like had spiked a little bit. So yeah, like we're at Monero level mining capacity at this moment. Like people are fully expecting this thing to just absolutely moon. Like otherwise they wouldn't be like pointing so much hash at this.
Quite reactive.
So this will probably be the most profitable mineable coin for a very long time. I think, well, Caspa would probably have been the other one, but this one I think is going to do really well. But yeah, like mining, think about like mining miners as sort of like customers. Like, why would someone mine it if they didn't think it was interesting, right? So it's like another consensus mechanism, which is like a metric you can use. So when people say price follows hash, this is what they mean by this. It's like, you know, why would someone be mining something if they didn't think they could make money from it? And they'd only think they can make money for it if the price is going to go up. If they believe the price is going to go up, they're more likely to hold the token, not sell it, including miners.
Like so, Bruce said it, right? Bruce said it this way. It's like, yeah, you get yourself hooked, right? It's like, now you got the miner. What are you going to do, right?
Yeah.
No, so. But the other thing is, it is also a physical reality. I mean, a lot of the time, I mean, if you talk about Apple, for example, it's a company, you have an iPhone, you can identify yourself. But with many crypto projects, I mean, it's difficult because it's just some very abstract concept, right? I mean, it's not anywhere. It's just a lock script that exists somewhere. So if you have something that's like in your room and doing its thing, right? I mean, people can relate to physical objects more easily, I guess.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's but yeah, I think this has interesting narratives too. Like, I think we should kind of repeat over and over the AI concept, because like, one, this is a useful coin if you were running an AI and you wanted to make money, you want to hide your money, and you want to be able to like trade between Zeph and ZSD. You like creating bots to do so is a great way for an AI to make money in secret. So on the one hand, it could spell the doom of all of us, because the Terminator robot is going to like make money in the background and just like screw us all. The other way it's interesting is AI is they're doing a lot more like AI based on-chain sleuthing to figure out whose wallets are owned by who and whatever. And having platforms like this protects you against AI threats, because more and more bad actors are going to use AI against you. They're going to use it against you impersonating you. They're going to use it for like ransomware and all sorts of other things. So I think like having a stash of like privacy is beneficial from that regard. And then the other piece of the puzzle is like, if, you know, CBDCs have become very common, like they're trying to do in Europe, then you might want to have a stash of mined or just like, you know, purchase Zeph that you just hide away and you just keep it in secret, so you have it available if you need to use it or for any particular reason. So it's like a good go bag type concept to have a little bit for safety purposes, just because who the hell knows what kind of world CBDCs create. And, you know, this is like a little bit of a hedge against that, so to speak. So like, but the privacy narrative is going to be really, really big when the Overton window shifts and people actually realize what the hell CBDCs are. Most people don't understand what crypto is. Most people don't understand what a smart contract is. I'd say probably 99% of the human race is probably in that category. But when they start realizing, wait a minute, CBDCs can like be functionally like track everything I do. And not only that, but they can like incentivize certain actions and disincentivize others. What's that?
Nudge you in some direction, right? Like, you want to buy something. Oh, the transaction didn't go through, and it does it two times or three times, just enough for you to forget about it, right? It's just nudging is already enough. Sometimes you don't really have to restrict someone. And that froze up.
Hey, sorry, I had a phone call for a minute.
Yeah, I said they probably can even nudge you. They just, you want to buy something, and they're like, oh, sorry, a transaction didn't go through, and you try it three times and you're like, that, forget about it, I don't buy it, right? It's like even nudging works if they know what you're buying, right? Right now they don't know, because you're isolated by your bank and have to subpoena the bank to know. But with CBDC, they can see live what you're buying, right?
I mean, I don't think they're going to do anything like, I don't think it's gonna be so weird because you don't want, like,
it will be, Zephy. They're already very deep into this nudging shit, you know.
I don't know about nudging, but like, I think what would happen is that, like, they'll overtly say, like, okay, you know, you're gonna be taxed more on a sales tax if you happen to buy a Coca-Cola versus a piece of lettuce, yes, piece of lettuce or something, you know.
More direct issues from that. I mean, if you do something subtle that no one realizes but still works, it's like this, what they're talking about is like persuasive AI, right? So it's got its way to actually do something to you without you really noticing it, so you won't get fed up with the government doing something. But if they know what you're buying, you know, they could actually direct you in a way. I guess, you know, it's not a good thing that the government knows what you're buying and what your preferences are. You know, I don't want these people to know anything more than they have to know. You know? Really.
Well, the government doesn't fully want it all on record either, because then they can make up CPI numbers and things, right? So that's part of it too.
Yeah, that might be right. That might
truth kind of truth cuts both ways in some ways. So
yeah, we'll see what happens, but normally the shit comes first, right? The evil things come first, and then comes the good stuff out of a new technology. Anyways, yeah, but it's a hedge against CBDCs. You're right about that.
How close do you think the U.S. is to a CBDC?
The U.S., I don't believe, is as close, but that they created that new FedNow program. I don't know if you know about it. So the Fed is making it possible to sort of like transact directly with them now, which is interesting. So that's kind of getting there. It lays the groundwork for it. Europe is much closer. The U.S., because it's the reserve currency, like anything that they do impacts like the globe dramatically. And the plus side in the U.S. is like not everyone agrees upon like, you know, a standard that easily here, because you have to go through a lot of legislation and whatnot, right? So I don't know how much it becomes a treasury related issue. And I don't know if like, I'm not sure if the treasury could actually release CBDC like outright without like some kind of legislation. I'm not 100% sure how the politics work there as far as the levers of government, but it's going to come anyway. Cause like a lot of the things that we think about how our money is used and how credit cards are monitored and everything, like there's an element of that already. And the I don't know what's the right way to look at this. Like the temptation in the Garden of Eden to eat that apple is really high by a lot of different parties. And therefore the odds that you're going to have that apple get eaten is high. Does that make sense? Like the odds are just super high that tech will get adopted.
I feel the same way. I think that it's inevitable, but it's just...
Yeah, it feels inevitable, right? Yeah, it feels inevitable to me. It's like AI. It just feels inevitable now. But like the thing is, like what we're interested in, obviously, is we want the privacy narrative to become front and center by like around this time, you know, next year. You know, it'll drive the next run-up for Zephyr and privacy coins. So like Monero, everything probably pops if we have a new privacy narrative and people start screaming about CBDCs left and right, which really has not happened yet, right? Like you see a few people talking about it, like Eric Voorhees and a few other guys that talk about it. But at the same time, like even the Bitcoin Maxi folks they don't discuss the privacy part that often. You have some BTC Maxis that are also Monero fans, Zcash fans, and whatever. But, you know, it like everyone got sort of caught up in the store of value narrative and completely like ignored the privacy concern narrative. And I don't know about ignored, but like the general populace generally doesn't get into privacy coins and care about them that much. I mean, how often do you see on Twitter like any serious concern for privacy? Almost never, right? Like it's almost nobody talks about it. And so like
it's just so bored.
It's bullish, but it's also weird too. It's like, wait a minute. Like it seems like there'd be a product market fit, but like for some reason the privacy protocols are not the ones that get most of the bids as far as like people buying it. And that's with them being around for a long time. So it's weird.
I think people are afraid. Like when it's private, it's a little bit scarier.
I think it's basically that most of the public doesn't use crypto, right? I mean, there's a certain percentage, but people don't really use it for payments. But once you have CBDCs coming online and everyone's using it, people will be more interested in stacking some cash away in something, which is like hidden away from the eyes of whomever, right?
Yeah, we're like one pandemic away from like complete cash banning cash, you know, and then complete panopticon. And I don't think that's any good. That wouldn't be a very good scenario for us to be in. But I think that that's the reality of the situation. That they say, oh, the cash is spreading the disease. Now we can't use cash anymore. Let me see everything you do forever. You know, and give me 40% of it. Give me 50% of everything you do. And, you know, I think that, you know, we're not seeing the effects of it largely because of how much automation has increased abundance. You know, we've got a lot of, you know, if you look at where we were at like 200 years ago versus where we are now, you know, we've increased abundance massively. But, you know, a lot of that wealth has gone, you know, and stagnated. And I think that, you know, if we get into a position where we start doing, you know, CBDCs or they use fear to take our freedoms again, you know, there could be a very sketchy scenario where you're not allowed to speak out against the political party. You're not allowed to have your own viewpoints. You're only allowed to have viewpoints of the mainstream political party. And, you know, CBDC ties into all of that. So, you know, for me, that's where the privacy narrative really comes in, is like at the root of our, like the core of our freedoms. So that's why I support it personally.
Can you guys hear me okay? I had to go to my car real quick, driving. Or does it sound terrible?
Sounds pretty awful.
I can tell you're in your car, but
yeah, I can hear you, you know.
We can hear you. Go ahead.
I think maybe I'll drop off for, we'll kind of continue as later today then. Because I've got to go drive somewhere and it's noisy in my car.
All right, I'll come back on later.
Catch you later, guys.
See you guys.
Later, bro.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payments, red down days. Got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss. And I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary falls. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of DNA stacked in non-toxic just to get a better place, smacking on the hostage like the shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines, they call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats tearing apart your community, all these low hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10 stargazing after the siege, commanding all the management to grab a few Z's, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality, stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Terror Spaces.